I'm Dave Heller, and this is Newsworks Tonight. Ahead this evening, Mayor Jim Kenney urges Philadelphia's low-income residents to take advantage of millions of dollars in tax credits. First, during last weekend's blizzard, parts of the Jersey Shore saw flooding that residents say was worse than what they experienced during Superstorm Sandy. And to reach many of those stranded by the storm, emergency crews used surplus military vehicles left over from the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. As WHYY's Joe Hernandez reports, many towns said they needed the vehicles to get through the flooding.
Flooding was so bad in Barnegat Township along the shore that parts of the town were under mandatory evacuation. Police Chief Arthur Drexler said the only way to reach the people who stayed was in military Humvees and 5-ton troop transport trucks.
We had a 5-ton place, you know, at a nice point where the tides usually start to come up. We had a patrol in one of the Humvees, and it allowed us to get through an area where, frankly, we wouldn't be able to get to.
The same was happening an hour south in North Wildwood, where crews used military trucks to rescue more than 150 people. Mayor Patrick Rosanello says the argument that these vehicles are militarizing small local police departments went out the window during the blizzard.
When people are calling to be rescued out of their houses, and the only vehicle available is a surplus military truck, I don't think anybody cares that these are surplus military vehicles. To me, it's kind of a ridiculous comment.
West Wildwood Mayor Christopher Fox says his fleet of 6 military trucks is crucial to rescuing people in his town, but acknowledges that others can go too far.
You'll never hear me say this is a bad thing with the military surplus vehicles, because they are so essential for us here in Barrow Islands, and we're not abusing them. But there are towns that do. And then the towns you need to go to and say, why do you need this piece of apparatus?
State and local police departments can get a wide variety of other military equipment through the federal program, including armored trucks and assault rifles. From the New Jersey desk, I'm Joe Hernandez, WHYY News.
Looking for a job? Well, look no further than the First State. Helping us to read the want ads is Frank Newport, editor-in-chief at the Gallup Poll. Hi, Frank.
Hi, hello, Dave.
What's going on in Delaware?
Well, whatever's going on there is very positive as far as jobs are concerned, because what we do every night is to ask everybody that's working in this country, is the place where you're working, your company, your organization, hiring people, or is it firing people or keeping the employment about the same? And we added up all of those interviews from last year and then broke it out by state. And the positive news is for Delaware, and this is great news, it's right up there tied for fourth place out of all the states in the union in terms of people telling us, hey, my company's hiring rather than firing.
Now, was that data compiled before DuPont recently announced layoffs?
It was. These data are averaged across the entire year of 2015, January through December. So it clearly would not reflect what's happening in recent weeks or even in recent months.
What's going on in New Jersey and Pennsylvania?
Well, unfortunately, not as good a picture at all. New Jersey's not in the bottom 10, but almost in the bottom 10 in terms of their residents telling us that there are jobs there as opposed to people being fired. Pennsylvania is a little higher than New Jersey, but still below average.
Do you have that state ranking handy?
I do.
Where does Iowa place?
Iowa's an interesting question for the reasons that I'm sure you're thinking of, since the caucuses are up and coming. It's almost at average, a little above Pennsylvania, a little below the national average, but not much. So Iowa's neither booming, nor is it in bad shape as far as jobs are concerned.
And so for Iowans anticipating participating in those caucuses now just 3 days out, is the economy top of mind for them in terms of issue?
Well, I don't have a breakout for what Iowans per se are telling us is the biggest thing they want the presidential candidates to be discussing or what they want them to be doing, but we certainly have new data on that nationwide. This is the question: what do you want the new president, when he or she takes office, to focus on most? And I think that's a very key question. And nationwide, the economy is number one, followed by dealing with immigration, which is interesting. That actually comes in second, then defense and homeland security, and then health care. And health care would include perceptions of the Affordable Care Act, followed by dealing with terrorism, and then education, dealing with jobs, and the federal deficit.
I've not heard you list immigration that high up on the ranking. And what happened with anger over dysfunction in government?
Well, dysfunction in government actually doesn't come up in this asking of the question. The reason you're asking that is because it's number one when we say what's the most important problem facing the country. But when we phrase it this way, what issue or challenge do you want the next president to take? Dysfunction in government doesn't show up that much. You are absolutely right, Dave, in terms of immigration. I'll contrast this to when we asked the same question back in 2000. That was an open seat election. You know, Clinton was leaving office. And immigration was only mentioned by 1% of the public, as opposed to 14% now to come in second.
Suffice to say, though, Americans are pretty angry about dysfunction in government.
Absolutely. Americans think things do not work well in Washington. They don't have a lot of respect or regard for elected representatives they send to Washington. And, of course, that's the kind of anger that a personality like Donald Trump can tap into.
Though, how does that square with recent poll results where apparently half of the respondents say they're better off now than they were 8 years ago?
I would say in comparison to 2000, that's low. We asked that same question in the open seat election in 2000 we've been talking about, and a much higher percent said they were better off. So that half that say they're better off is actually low. It breaks along political lines. Most Republicans say they're worse off than 8 years ago, even though I would imagine we would find if we looked at their W-2 forms, they're actually making more money than they were. They just can't say they're better off because it was a Democratic president.
Thanks, Frank.
You bet, Dave.
Frank Newport, editor-in-chief at the Gallup Polls. He joins us each week at this time on NewsWorks Tonight. It's tax time again, and officials in Philadelphia say that last year, many poor residents left a combined $100 million in tax credits on the table. WHYY's Katie Colinari reports on a new campaign to keep that from happening this year.
It's called the You Earned It campaign because that's pretty much what the Earned Income Tax Credit is, a federal tax refund on income earned by families making less than $54,000 a year. Philadelphia Mayor Jim Kenney says those who qualify get an average refund of about $2,400.
The Philadelphians who qualify for this money work hard. Many of them struggle to make ends meet, to keep their families fed, clothed, and in quality housing. Whether it's a few $100s or a couple $1,000s, this refund can make a huge difference to everyone's daily life.
It's considered one of the country's most effective anti-poverty programs. But of the 200,000 Philadelphians eligible for the tax credit, 20% of them don't even apply. City Revenue Commissioner Frank Breslin says that's because many don't know about the credit, or they assume it's too complicated to apply and can't afford good tax preparation services.
It doesn't have to be this way. Our department has invested our top people, top resources, and we've enlisted the insights of those serving the target communities for this program to strategize how to best overcome these barriers.
The city is paying two nonprofits to provide free tax preparation services at about 30 sites across the city. It's also spending about $350,000 on a marketing campaign that'll feature radio ads and posters on buses and subways, reminding residents they've earned it. Katie Colinari, WHYY News.
Turning to this evening's headlines, Governor Tom Wolf is helping to kick off Pennsylvania's new campaign to help prevent sexual assaults in high schools and on college campuses. Wolf introduced the campaign today at Elizabethtown College. His administration plans to develop policy recommendations and resources for high schools and colleges. An estimated 20% of college women are victims of attacks. In 2014, President Barack Obama launched the It's On Us campaign, encouraging everyone to take responsibility for helping to stop sexual assaults. The Pennsylvania agency awarding grants for lower-income college students is trying to ensure that a state budget fight does not leave students short of the aid they were promised. The Pennsylvania Higher Education Assistance Agency says its board agreed last week to dip into reserves to ensure the grants are fully funded. Spokesperson Keith New says the agency estimates that another $11.5 million will be necessary beyond the $305 million already authorized by Governor Tom Wolf and state lawmakers. The agency pledged aid to nearly 146,000 Pennsylvania college students this year. Officials have broken ground on what will become New Jersey's tallest building. Plans call for a 79-story tower at 99 Hudson Street in Jersey City to stand 900 feet and be home to almost 800 condominium units. The 781-foot-tall Goldman Sachs Tower in Jersey City is currently the state's tallest building. 36 degrees at 6:16. Tonight's forecast, clear skies falling back to 23 degrees. Mostly sunny tomorrow, Saturday's high 40. a high near 50 degrees on Sunday under increasingly cloudy skies. You're listening to NewsWorks Tonight on WHYY-FM. Thanks for being a YStream supporter of WHYY. I'm Dave Heller. Let's take a music break with Iranian-American singer Mamek Kadem from her CD, The Road. It's a collection of traditional melodies from Iran and Eastern Europe. This is A Thousand Strings. That's Mamek Kadem from her CD, The Road. It features the guitars of Jorge Struntz and Ardeshir Farah, who are heard more often playing flamenco music. You're listening to Newsworks Tonight on Pledge Free Y-Stream.
Supporting WHYY, Sony Pictures Classics, The Lady in the Van with Maggie Smith, directed by Nicholas Heitner, based on Alan Bennett's true story of a woman who parks her van in his driveway and lives there for 15 years. Now playing.
Treat yourself to a decadent winter evening of tasty foods, fine drinks, the best of local businesses, and of course, lots of chocolate. WHYY's annual chocolate event is back on Tuesday, February 2nd. Find the perfect gift for yourself or someone special just in time for Valentine's Day. Visit WHYY.org/chocolate to get your ticket to this evening of luxury.
Supporting WHYY, Google, presenting a workshop on how to get your business online, Wednesday, February 3rd, from 9:30 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. at the Kimmel Center for the Performing Arts, Philadelphia. GYBO.com/events/Philadelphia.
Welcome back to Newsworks Tonight. I'm Dave Heller. Billionaire and former New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg sees a possible path to the presidency if Donald Trump or Ted Cruz prevail among Republicans and the Democrats nominate Bernie Sanders. To which New York University history professor Jonathan Zimmerman says, run, Mike, run. He joins me now on this episode of That's History to substantiate his preference. Welcome back, Jonathan.
Good to be here as always.
Well, clearly there's precedent. George Washington prevailed as an independent. It hasn't gone as well for third-party runs since.
No, and I think Bloomberg himself is probably very sanguine about his chances. And the reason is history. Everyone who's tried to become president outside of the major parties has failed. If you go back to 1832, the first third-party candidate was a guy named William Wirt, who ran on the anti-Masonic ticket. And one of his problems was that it turned out that he had himself been a Mason. So he was a member of the organization.
That came out on social media, apparently.
Exactly. He was a member of the party that his own party was designed to crush. But he got 8% of the vote. And yet, and I think this is important and the reason why I do want Bloomberg to run, Wirt's issue, such as it was beyond the Masons, was he thought that party conventions should be open. That is, candidates, instead of being chosen behind closed doors, that there should be an open discussion about their nomination. And lo and behold, after William Wirt's failed run, the other parties started to do exactly that. You know, if you go into more recent history, really the most successful third-party candidate was Theodore Roosevelt in 1912. He had the advantage of name recognition because he had been the president for almost two terms. But he ran on the Progressive Party ticket because he was dissatisfied with the direction of the Republican Party. He didn't win. He got about a quarter of the vote. But, and I think here's what's really important, the issues that Roosevelt put forth in that campaign became national issues in ways they wouldn't have without him. I'm talking about women's suffrage. I'm talking about the 8-hour workday, the minimum wage, the federal income tax, the direct election of senators. All these things which actually came to pass in part because of this third-party effort on Roosevelt's part.
You know, we do have an electoral college system, and that reinforces the two-party structure. It's virtually impossible for another person to gain the required 270 electoral votes.
That's one reason, the Electoral College. I think the other one is that it turns out that party identification is really deeply imprinted on people's psyches. It's true that there are people who call themselves independents, but even those people often either lean blue or red, that is, lean Democrat or Republican. And it turns out that those identities are so deeply imprinted that it's extremely hard to get people to vote for somebody that doesn't share one of them.
So clearly, it's virtually impossible for Bloomberg to win swing states, Florida, Virginia, Ohio, Colorado, New Hampshire, Nevada, New Mexico. Why do you suggest that he run anyway?
Well, first of all, I wouldn't say it's impossible. I think it's highly unlikely. I suggest he run for two reasons. First of all, just like Theodore Roosevelt brought reforms like the 8-hour workday into the public discourse, I think Bloomberg would bring gun violence and gun control very close to the forefront of our politics, precisely because he's been probably the most prominent spokesman for those issues. Secondly, I think especially at this moment in our history, he would have a moderating effect on the election, precisely because the electorate itself has become so polarized. And I think you can see that especially on the Republican side. And I think that one hope of Bloomberg or his advocates is that if a fire breather like Trump or Cruz is nominated, that more moderate Republicans might move over to Mike Bloomberg. I think whatever happens, and it's, of course, impossible to predict, I think Bloomberg is a much more centrist figure, surely, than the other Republicans in the race, and that he would have a kind of moderating effect on the election.
Thanks for joining us on Newsworks tonight.
Thanks. It was fun.
Jonathan Zimmerman, history professor at New York University, and you can hear more of our conversation at newsworks.org. Finally this evening, a familiar face and figure is getting a major update.
Barbie, beautiful Barbie, I'll make believe that I am you.
Following an announcement from toy maker Mattel this week, Barbie dolls will now come in new shapes and sizes, curvy, petite, tall, as well as 7 skin tones, 22 eye colors, and 24 hairstyles. It's a change that comes nearly 60 years after Barbie's debut, amid concerns that the doll's original look is out of touch. Newsworks Philly parenting bloggers weighed into the discussion. 3 of them offered an essay on why or why not they see the transition as a needed change. Blogger Rachae Fagg admits her unapologetic love of Barbie, adding that playing with the doll offered her a form of escapism. She says, quote, "It always confused me when people would express their extreme dislike, hate even, of Barbie. Sure, with her blonde hair and perfect body, she looked nothing like me, but that was what I loved about her." Well, you can read more of her story and join the conversation at newsworks.org. That's all for tonight's show. Newsworks Tonight is produced by Shai Ben-Yakov and Kimberly Haas. We had help this week from Brett Rader and our intern, Jared Whalen. Our news director is Eugene Son. At the helm this week, Al Banks and Diana Martinez. John Mussoni is acting vice president of news and civic dialogue. Listen again to a story or catch up on a missed show via podcast or online at newsworks.org. Thanks for joining us, and have a great weekend.